imploding in on itself like a collapsing star. The energetic corona of a vibrant azure energy brings the nefarious Atlas headquarters crumbling down to ground zero. Amidst the rubble and flames, we see the legendary Rey Ligarian warrior, Ryu Sengoku, standing beside the technological mastermind, Anarchy 12. Anarchy's mini drones begin sweeping and scanning the ruined site for remaining life. They detect nothing, when suddenly, exploding from under blankets of destruction, a gigantic Atlas mech emerges from its sacred hangar. A bipedal weapon of mass destruction, both arms draped in experimental bleeding-edge ballistic technology, all manned by their arch-nemesis, CEO of Atlas Corp, Jeremiah Oliver. Before our heroes could find cover, the frantic and bloody Jeremiah unloads the Atlas Arch-Mech's arsenal on its enemies. Ryu deflects and evades bullets. Anarchy's android infantry provides and erects a shelter for him, but the firepower became too overwhelmingly effective. Superior missiles and rapid-fire dragon rounds rip through cover and decimate the entire
group. That's bullshit.
Ruiz cuts me off while swiping his miniature and D20 off of the game table.
Hey, chill. He won the dice roll. You know, at least you were able to blow up the headquarters and do flips and deflect bullets and look all cool and stuff. Flipping around and stuff. Should have saw what it looked like in my head.
Ryu manipulates energy. He would have sensed the energy signature of the mech, and Anarchy is more than capable of taking control of the damn thing. He controls technology.
I lean back nonchalantly. Hey, look, you're not lying, but energy is everything. And the setting is sci-fi. Everything is fucking technology. Come on, you're all gods. And you can't win all the time. Jeremiah won the dice roll, and so whatever justification I come up with has to and will trump your godlike powers.
Jason smiles while fiddling with his character sheet. Darren calmly grabs his Anarchy 12 miniature off the table.
This finale sucks.
Jason adds salt to the wound. You always have fun until you lose, you babies. The two begin screaming at each other over the game table. I unbutton my shirt a few notches. It was getting hot.
Approaching the Nepenthe system. Hyperjump imminent.
The AI announces. I begin packing up our campaign game board while we complain about each other's interpretation of the meta with sharp tongues. But we all had tough skin. Darren pulls out the shot glasses and slides them over to me.
No, seriously, y'all. There's too much focus on what doesn't matter.
I begin pouring each of us shots of something quite peculiar, recently gifted to us, along with our payment. A chocolatey cherry aroma with a note of automobile fuel, some would say. I continue. It's about the roleplay, the interactions of the characters, and yet a meta, but not the meta's meta. I fill the last glass to the brim. I catch the overflow with my lips, quenching a parched tongue after a night of talking, and I guess also claiming my glass. I turn and begin handing the shots out when unexpectedly, my eyes are forced onto a grisly and harrowing scene. A phenomenon ushered in with the tremendous sizzling crackle that damn near knocked me off of my feet, pushing me off into the vacuum of space spawned by a significant tear in the ship. Were we just attacked? My crew instantly became char-broiled corpses scattered across the ship lounge, roasting within pockets of waning and waxing fire. What little flesh remained on them, silently baked under the heat of the entire room, turned oven. My arms and legs doused in fire. I dive to the ground to begin rolling it off, but when I make impact, I explode. I wake abruptly. The same old familiar nightmare that always seemed to eject me from its phantasm. Sweating to a non-existent heat source, heart racing a mile a minute. I catch my breath and exhale. Let me tell you a quote that I like. If you meet a loner, no matter what they tell you, it's not because they enjoy solitude. It's because they have tried to blend into the world before and people continue to disappoint them. Restless, anxious, and coping with some intense heartburn, I lay peering into the deep navy blue void of the Caperton Beltway. Magenta trails of fleeting comets illuminate the face of my ship and interior seating, reminding me just how bad the leather needed a thorough wipe down. With a moist thumb, I clear off the face of my watch and declare that it's time to get a move on. Several steps away, I was already in my bathroom mirror and proceeded to lean in for a closer glimpse of my face. I could see my pupils dilating and the ascension of my veins toward the surface of my flesh, specifically around my temple region. What will it be today, I ponder. I reached for my meds and doubled the dosage in anticipation of the worst. I throw the empty medicine tray away and begin doing some deep breathing. What I learned about my Alright. It's here. Here we go. I push off of my sink over to the bathroom hatch and seal myself in. I then grasp onto the nearby handles and brace myself. My bathroom was more than a bathroom for me. It was mostly a blast containment tank. A sharp pain shoots up my chest like one of those high striker carnival games, except the bell was my goddamn collarbones that began to fracture from the building of pressure. Or at least that's how it felt. I hold on tight and begin to hiccup violently, each one like a chop in the throat. The center of my chest fissures and breaks open. It was unlike anything I've ever felt or seen, forcing me to buckle to my knees, clutching my chest. Gnashing teeth begin to protrude from the gaping sinkhole that is now the monstrous mouth spawning upon my chest. Breathing has gotten harder, and I think I'm gonna die. I begin to feel relief as the medicine begins to kick in. But not fast enough, I reach a ceiling of pain that pushes me into a state of complete unconsciousness, plummeting into a faceplant, ass up on the bathroom floor. I awaken, pulling my face from the cold, clammy bathroom floor. Something felt different and unusual. Though usual, just not like this. Small splatters of blood can be seen sprinkled across the floor tile, sink, and mirror, and soon I am reminded of the cards I was dealt this day. My initial reaction was that of one when you discover that your dream was not a dream at all, but very much a reality. I run my index finger up and down the hideous jagged fangs clenched together vertically embedded across my torso, and soon come to accept today's mutation. It could be worse. I can handle this, I say aloud, pep-talking myself. I reach for my toothpaste and hyperspatial splinter probe and begin to give my beloved teeth a good bust down while observing my new toothy alien orifice through the mirror. At least I can cover it. The foul, pungent stench of blood creeps across my nostrils. It's me, fuck. I'm really going to need to seal that up good. I observe the star map nestled within my dashboard to determine my whereabouts, unsure of how long I've been passed out. Luckily, I had only passed my destination a day ago. Not ideal, but it could be worse. I spent almost a month holed up in this crampy ship alone, what's another few days. I catch another whiff of my mutant chest mouth breath, and quickly arrived to the conclusion that maybe this delay was for the best. Maybe I could wait it out, not have to be seen by anyone with the mouth on my chest. My hollow screen springs up with one of the most exasperating notification sounds known to man, informing me of an incoming transmission. My knee-jerk reaction was to grab and hurl my variable retinal wrench at it, but I'd soon regret that. Wouldn't want to add several Zarkons onto only hundreds of Bizquirks worth of needed work. But who could even be calling me right now, and how? Doesn't matter. I collapse and ignore the transmission, then proceed to my workbench when suddenly, with comedic timing, the screen springs back up. I turn slowly, vastly confused, because this was impossible. I walk over and dismiss the alert again. Unfortunately, my hollow board was broken, so the key mapping was discombobulated and widely unpredictable. The hollow screen begins shorting out and smoking. With the spatula in my left hand and a cybernetic matrix mallet in my right, I start wailing at it in hopes of putting it out of its misery once and for all. It was a bit immature of me, but I was frustrated and not having a good day. With one final slam, the hollow screen flickers pink and goes silent. Squinting in disbelief, I peer up at the bright light with a sense of accomplishment when just then the screen becomes occupied by a giant probing eyeball staring into my naked body's soul. I stumble backward and dive out of view. The eye pulls back, revealing a pale-faced, ghoulish, and gaunt elderly man donning a tilted, soggy wizard hat adorned with tiny gem-encrusted badges and dangling jewelry connected to the brim of his hat to his heavily pierced ears and nose. His frail neck was lined with dangling layers of flab reminiscent of birthday streamers. The wizard bore a heavy black cuirass, complete with pauldrons that took up the majority of the screen, which made his unfitting head look like it was being squeezed from a tube of toothpaste.
Scavenger!
The wizard croaks as he stares into my chest's gaping jaws.
Fuck!
It was my client. I grab and throw my coat to cover up my situation. It was the desperate wizard from Brindlerock, whom I've not only ignored DMs from for days, but am also late to rendezvous with.
Bloomkill, the ruler! Good day to you, sir. Happy to see you.
The wizard furrows his hairless brows.
5, 6, D12, and 31 jump grids away, scavenger.
I gesture toward the smoking ruined dashboard before me. I was delayed by some technical difficulties, and the wizard cuts me off, his voice cold and wet.
How could I no longer be your priority when you have something that belongs to me?
Hey, relax. I'm on my way this very moment. I'll be there and,
I pretend to calculate my ETA, as I know it wasn't going to be anything he wanted to hear. Bloomkill the ruler looks testy. A sizable bulging vein cascades across his forehead as his flappy jowls begin to tremble. The last remaining gallons of hyperjump fuel suddenly deplete from my ship's reserves, and my engines start to queue up a hyperjump seemingly by itself. Bloomkill shoots me a sharp glare, and just before disconnecting croaks,
"You'll be here in 2 hours, scavenger."
Of course. A technomancer. Hyperjump isn't cheap. He better plan on compensating for that. I don't give a fuck who he is. Don't touch my shit, I say aloud. I then look around wary of him potentially overhearing.
I walk over to my shabby workbench and place my hand on the obscured object that I've worked on for months. This was my big ticket and all I needed to get my life back on track. I look over at a poster of a field ship, large enough to foster generations of several families within the expanse. Forward and backward, its weight and prestige rivaled the 7th Titanic. Its glory was a potent inspiration for my deep desire to pilot and serve on a field. The drive felt maternal. I couldn't put my finger on it, but cheesy as it sounded, it was my calling. So I needed everything to fall through with this wizard. Brindlerock. A sizable yet quaint asteroid formation hidden deep behind a veil of oceanic mist draped around its perimeter like an ethereal ribbon. I approach its atmosgate and initiate submergence. Everything becomes uncomfortably frigid for a moment, and stabilizes shortly after while passing through the atmosgate's field. Never get used to the sensation. The star systems were toxic and riddled with gamma-emitting rifts. If your planet or living space wasn't encased within a functional atmosgate, then it wasn't a living space at all. I think back to a time I wrestled a man over cans of Spam in an abandoned restaurant. His helmet cracked during the tussle, and I watched his head expand like microwaved silly putty. They mutated so severely that the entire structure crumbled under their endless growths and mass of mutated tendrils. An abomination is what you become. I slowly disembark into Brindlerock's befouling atmosphere of smog billowing from out of the gigantic castle-esque factory wedged within the asteroid. The wizard's fortress was concocting more pollution than any space station I've ever seen with a fraction of the populace. Exiting a dense cloud of smog, I find myself navigating through a flock of cybernetic chimera, bat-like, with expressive human faces. The anguish on their faces weep in ruin as they collide, splatter, and roll off of my ship. As I penetrate another cloud of miasmic smog, and closer toward the grim saturated surface of the pseudo-planet with the magical gravitational pool. I spot several robed folk below flagging me down, their long sleeves flap in the wild winds cascading around their fluid summoning gestures. These rigid semantics would call forth the sizable mechanical landing pad, beckoning me to touch down on. I retrieve Repugnant from the passenger seat and toss it over my shoulder. Not that I expected shit to get messy, I just prefer to be prepared. And Repugnant was akin to a bag of holding your spoiled adventuring party would be rewarded with by a coddling dungeon master, but perhaps a bit more grim and dismal. It wasn't a bag, but it was a big-ass, broad, ugly, decapitated head of a human giant with a hot, gaping mouth, substituting as an entrance into an endless void. A void in which I store all of my junk. A supreme and priceless oddity that fell into my hands, and it seemed like it bled for an eternity. But that little mess was a lenient trade-off for endless inventory space, and damn if it wasn't a conversation starter. I stowed her behind my waist, grab my swanky shades, and load the wizard's assortments over my back. Stepping down from my quaint rickety craft, some blindfolded magistrates silently judge me. My ship was by no means glamorous, and straight up looked like trash while parked beside this here sleek, radiant mercenary cruiser, likely purchased with dishonesty coins and the blood of the innocent. I make a clean and honest living, you hear? Don't judge me. The men look at each other in confusion. I clench Repugnant and march toward Bloomkill's steampunk castle. So many steps. I march on. A small gust generated by a levitating adept passes by, whacks my beard. They majestically ascend the stairs upon a mechanical orb at thrice the speed I was. Not jealous. Salty. Excuse me, miss. The distracted mage sets her cybernetic eyes on me. Hey, you mind if... I gesture toward my 300-pound body, then at her. She frowns and proceeds to hover away. Wait. I reach elbow deep into the abysm of Repugnant's jaws, while jogging to keep up with her. Minutes later, we arrive at the top of the steps. I dismount from her shoulders. She was too fascinated with the desolate mana stone I traded her to be concerned with the judgment of her peers or her strained back. Ooh. I salute her and continue on my way when suddenly, exploding out of the front gates and through the mob of mages, is a chiseled, greasy stud of a man armed to the teeth, fleeing from unknown pursuers. Seize him! A voice shouts from inside the castle, triggering two nearby mages likely on payroll to engage the mercenary, their hands now charged and glowing with raw power. Before the mage could make a gesture or speak a word of power, the mercenary plunges an omnium dagger into his throat, twists, then rips it out of the side of his neck, and within the same motion, draws a laser pistol and blows the other mage's skull in, shifting the equator of its head a quarter ways back. Oh! I slide out of the way with my hand on my pistol. The frazzled mercenary shouts into his watch, "It's a no-go, ladies, come get me." Just then, the thrusters of a fancy mercenary cruiser beside mine ignites and begins to dervish wildly, maiming all the surrounding mages attempting to block its departure. A tentacle-headed woman leans out of the cockpit and with a flame-spewing rifle sprays lava-like projectiles at her foes while charging the vehicle ahead and toward the castle stairway. The mercenary turns toward me with pistol drawn and an intense glare as if daring me to interfere. He spits out his cigarette. "Don't any of you move. I shoot through motherfuckers to save bullets, you hear me?" Well, shit, I make no sudden moves and try to look as uninterested as possible.
"David, approaching 2 o'clock. Heckler's approaching."
David the mercenary smacks his receiver for better reception, but to no avail. The dying mage with the frayed neck begins to pull on my pant leg for help.
I yank myself away in a manner that says, yeah, fuck these mages, I'm with you, dog. But soon, all of our attention shifts toward an elderly woman clad in slithering tendrils of silver nanite superhero landing in front of the fortress gates. The mercenary wastes no time and books it toward his allies. Their cruiser charges its way up the stairs in time to catch him and cushion the mercenary's leap of faith. His passenger seat ally leans out of the window again with lava rifle firing unrelentlessly at anyone doing anything fancy with their fingers. This oddly contorted champion of this cloister of mages suddenly cracks her fingers, and echoing outward was the metallic screech you'd hear from a gigantic metal falcon if there ever were one. This screeching spell triggers their entire ship to flip, spin, and crash directly into the ground, flinging the rifleman from her seat and leaving her splattered across the right angles of several flights of stairs. I watch in awe, slightly shook, and wondering what could have possibly gone wrong with this business transaction. The mercenary comes slowly crawling out of the wreckage of his once glorious cruiser. He rolls over onto his back, with surrendering hands.
Have mercy.
The mage matriarch was unfazed by his agony, and signals for reinforcements to collect. The mercenary retrieves a magical stone from a satchel that he apparently had stolen, and holds it up for the mages to take. When suddenly, the mercenary draws his pistol for a quick kill, but couldn't fathom the danger he was already in. In a matter of seconds, the matriarch tugs both thumbs, puppeteering the vehicular death trap, and like water divided by wine, she triggers the sliding windows of her cruiser to seal shut, guillotining him sloppily. And then it was quiet again. Bloomkill, the ruler, seemed well protected. And whoever or whatever she was had me reconsidering. Maybe I won't demand that Bloomkill pay me back for the hyperjump fuel. Maybe I'm okay with just leaving here alive, with my life. Moments later, I find myself being escorted by several mages led by the matriarch. All were either blindfolded or straight-faced and on edge. I mean, how could this be anything but a no-sir, yes-sir trade where I get shafted with Cyber Shiva the Destroyer over here on standby kill? I didn't feel safe, but I wasn't going to let them know that. We arrive at Bloomkill the Ruler's audience chambers. He stood behind an elegant decorative table harboring stacks of bizquirks and carbon credit chips, laying nice and orderly like a tray of sashimi and sushi rolls.
Scavenger, you evaded me long enough.
What? No. I do all my fetch quests in the order of which I received them. Besides, I came to you. You can't, I got you now if I came to your front step, right? Bloomkill wasn't laughing. I have your shit, Bloomkill. I set Repugnant down. She rolls a bit. The mages look disturbed. I reach over my back and retrieve from under the cloak the wizard's newly refurbished and modified rune retelescriber. That's right, Bloomkill and every mage's mouth in the room cracks open in awe, clearly impressed by my additions and handiwork. This baby was a wizard's equivalent to a keyboard that lets one revert all of their accidental capital letters into lowercase letters, because how often do you need that, am I right? Except, this was with magic runes and shit. Bloomkill approaches the retelescriber and explores every facet of its glory. The AI blackening pack I synthesized with stolen Atlas chipsets, the relocation relocator I melded into the mana board to keep the most unstable runes anchored to our plane, a negation rock invalidator to take the brunt of the conjuration burn, allowing enchanted scribing for hours on end. It had the works. Bloomkill looks at me with a great big smile. He had teeth like a damn piranha, put my mutation to shame. He signals to his disciples, and like clockwork, they bring with them a table of artifacts, treasures, and trinkets. Which struck me as odd, being that this deal would be a credit reward. This majestic spread contained many oddities. A red necrofiend gauntlet, a pouch of glowing screws, a cybernetic bicep, all kinds of devices, all kinds. Bloomkill was willing to give up a lot, I see. I resist my curiosity and get back to business. I wasn't going to be jerked around. I slowly wave away his table of wonders. Look, no audibles, Bloomkill. I've assembled all the parts I needed to modify a rune retelescriber the way that would exceed your wants and expectations, in hopes that we could do business again and again, because I just have so much confidence in your word and cannot imagine how limitlessly lucrative our relationship could be if it remains honest and on track. All right? Bloomkill begins slowly pacing around the table toward me.
My creations are all a scavenger could hope to fantasize about.
Bloomkill stood towering in front of me, his beady artificial eyeballs peeking over his chest plate and me. Quite intimidating. But I was more disappointed than unhinged. I saw which way this was going. You never know what these mages, sorcerers, and witches, and warlocks, always on some bullshit. Look, Bloomkill, no offense to you and your handiwork. Suddenly, the mage lady with the thousand arms picks up her head and takes a step forward. And I think twice. Bloomkill doesn't even react to my feeble attempt at negotiation, somewhat offended by my lack of interest in his toys.
All right.
One Zarkon and 1,000 Bizquirks to cover the hyperjump fuel that you stole, and I'll be out of here. The room remains awkwardly silent. Bloomkill steps closer to me.
All right. I point at the table. I'll take that. Right there. That.
Bloomkill looks over.
Take what?
I shrug like a bratty teenager.
Any of it. Surprise me.
Bloomkill snatches off his glove and throws it to the floor. He didn't like that. I've never seen anyone look so offended.
Looks like I might be leaving here empty-handed.
Moments later, I'm hastily escorted back to the castle fortress steps with nothing but my life. Live and let live, I suppose. However, I let no one do anything, but whatever. All I know is if I begin walking down these steps, I would be accepting the fact that I just got bumfuzzled by some funky ass wizard trash. I kick a small rock as hard as I can, sending it flying down the steps, skipping over heads. I then feel a wave of nausea come over me, brought on by hunger. It was time to roll a save against poverty. I pry open my ship's hatch and step in. It looked smaller, more now than ever. A two-seater with the bathroom and inadequate storage space. It was much better than being stranded though, so I couldn't complain. My current situation will ensure my homelessness if history repeats itself sooner than later. I fumble around with the broken keypad to lock my ship up behind me when suddenly, a butt of a gun is brought across the back of my head, rendering all I see into doubles for a brief moment and hear muffled shouting in my ringing ears. I am yoked up and shaken by an angry human mercenary while pointing their pistol in my face. Get us out of here or I'll kill you and take us out of here, my damn self. I gather my bearings, at least visually, and all I can see are the intense, smoky eyes of a man who doesn't know his own strength and thinks I can hear him.
Hey, what's all this for, man?
He bashes his gun into my brow with a concerning crunch that damn near knocks me unconscious. You ever get hurt so bad that it made you mad? This was that. I bring my knee slamming into his groin with intentions of outright killing him if it were even possible. Fight or flight, because I think he's trying to kill me. With both of us disoriented, I attempt to tackle him to the floor, but he brings his knee crashing into my face, then kicks me back into my well-organized shelving spaces. The mercenary aims his gun with intention to kill, but... No but. He sent a bullet right into my forehead. The spiraling gale around the shell unfurls my vision into darkness, and everything goes black. I awaken abruptly, completely conscious. My eyes return from a deathly glazed milky gray, back to my heart beating browns. I turn and see my attacker preoccupied with barely functioning dashboard controls, botching a proper takeoff. Unawares, I sneak up from behind with repugnant in both hands and bash her into his back with a loud wet crunch. He yelps on his way down to the floor and I pounce on top of him with all my 300 pounds, exhausting him as I wrestle for his gun. He bashes his fists into my face once, then twice,
Something has come over me because I felt nothing, like a machine. He gets one last long look at my intense murder face, still smoking from the hole between my eyes before I dig my hand into his face, pinky finger and nose and thumb gouging his eye in. His attacks become more wild and desperate as he swings helplessly, and suddenly the gates of the abyss rip open within my bare mutant chest, and like a lunging crocodile, my enemy's fragile arms finds itself seized by the gnashing fangs oscillating within me. Like a vacuuming garbage disposal, he is pulled inward up to his shoulder as shreds of his arms splinter like a wood chipper. Even the pistol is grinded in between my chompers. I even tried pulling myself off of my attacker turned to prey. However, my torso was now devouring the assailant whole. The mercenary's legs flail as I try to pry them from my toothy, aberrant chemistry until finally snapping them off from the knee like corn stalks. A grisly and grotesque scene that I wanted no part of. My junky cockpit was painted in blood. I lay next to the pair of legs with a mood of disgust, yet satiated. I let out a refined belch. The smell of inhuman intestine and bowels on breath immediately causes my soul to cry on the inside. Ah. Bloom killed the ruler's landing patrols, watch and all, as I roll my victim's remnants off of my ship, kicking his legs out of the door. I'm confident it looked frightening, and I'm glad it did, because this could be them. I flip them all off with a plump, girthy finger, and take off with no intention of returning unless it was for payback. The android bartender slides another whiskey down the fancy bar top counter, colliding into my small collection of empty glasses. The cold mug's crisp condensation leaves a neon pink trail on the countertop's black marble finish. A gimmicky piece of furniture this hole in the wall was known for. Memories of the pitiful lining the bar stools looking into their own black reflection emerge in my thoughts. I gaze into my own. Far from pitiful, but with no fuel and only a few biz quirks to my name, I couldn't help but begin to have a little bit of an existential crisis. I throw back the entire mug with my last biz quirk. Well spent. My sober mind would agree if it were with us. Rest its soul. My loneliness was amplified by intoxication and poverty. I yearned to be a prosperous wayfarer of the star systems. But for me, it was always one step forward, three steps back. A vivid flashback ensues. I see myself standing within the spacious confines of a large ship, toasting to prosperity and success with my three crewmates, their faces initially obscured by the darkness of traumatic repressed memory, soon unveiled, like a computer struggling with a graphically intense video game rendering distant scenery. I was laser focused on DMing our tabletop campaign, yet still shared joy with my comrades. One second we were laughing and smiling. The next, I find myself standing naked, engulfed in flame among the charred corpses of my allies. The entirety of my surroundings was that of an oven. The hall was sizzling, the shot glasses in my fingers melting. It wasn't until I spotted our tabletop campaign board and character sheets embroiled in fire that I would begin to react, because that was everything. My nightmarish daydream was interrupted by the bartender's alarming request for my dismissal from the bar top. Nodding off was not allowed, but I assured him I was just sleepy and begged pardon. "Where are you headed, traveler?" I ignored the conversation tree on wheels, but do ponder my next move. Suddenly, the front pub door crashes open. A tall, shadowy android adventurer steps inside and looks around the empty bar slowly, then looks directly at me for a long, awkward moment and some change, likely scanning me. The port's neon lights illuminated the doorway, rendering the humanoid droid into just a tall and angular silhouette. I break eye contact and refocus on my drink, but kept my ears keen. It was typically with devious or desperate motives to send an android out, if it wasn't a pirate trying to steal from you, it was just someone outright trying to kill you. There was a brief window of continued silence. The android bartender
interjects, "Greetings, traveler, what can I get you?" I could feel it staring at me before finally making their way to a far table in a corner, before finally responding with a stoic, "Water and carbon milk." Moments go by. The last quarter of the Esquivar finals begins, but I couldn't stay any longer to watch. I had a delivery to make to a client I'm certain would be pissed. Already 2 days late, I retrieve my liquor chip from the bartender's mother pad. "Look at that. A free night stay next visit. I earned that. I deserve that," I say to the bartender. Suddenly, the android stranger approaches and sits beside me, then greets me happily, unbothered by the disembodied giant's head lying under my bar stool. "Stranger, greetings." I was shocked. The stranger was no android at all, actually. He was a middle-aged human, geared up in a radiation suit and oxygen mask. It was rare to see a human on the field, let alone one with a suit durable enough to withstand space radiation. I gripped my oxygen tank tighter. He was likely either here for my oxygen tank or access to my ship, which at this point, I was willing to die for. He extends his hand for a shake. "My name is Clifford Stripe." I ask myself, could I trust a man with a Dick Dastardly mustache that curled from end to end when he talked? In a stylish high-collar trench, polished loafers, and a crisp fedora? I think not. I nod, then continue on my way. I then feel his hand grab my shoulder and squeeze, like legit squeeze, each finger like a sausage-sized staple embedded into my collar. So strong, powerful, bold, and rude. I turn aggressively while pushing his hand away. "Yo, back the fuck up. Apologies, but I must have a word with you, sir." "Yeah? Well, don't touch me. Stay wise, friend." He looks at me with a blank face. I'm investigating the destruction of the Narcosis field ship 318. He holds up a photo of a small docked field ship beside a photo with presumably the same ship, though scorched with unsalvaged remnants adrift in the stars. The sight of the wreckage brought on a bout of heavy confusion, like a short in circuitry. I felt absent-minded, unable to connect thought to memory, nothing to put into words. It was traumatizing. The investigator stares into my face, investigating. I know I looked guilty, and even if he was reading me correctly, he'd be wrong. "Are you familiar?" Clifford whispers, while shuffling photos of familiar faces to and fro from the top of his stack of notes. I see each face shuffle through each photo. I knew these players. These players? Friends. I knew these friends. These were friends of mine. My friends, I say aloud, on accident. Clifford's eyes twinkle. He was indulging in my irresoluteness. The Narcosis was discovered in pieces. Obliterated. Were you not its pilot during its budding expedition? I was.
You were.
He whispers as he softly draws circles into my wrist. I'm not sure how long my wrist has been in his hands, but it was. And it currently is. And I wasn't reacting. Holographic light projects from my forearm, projecting unintelligible data before both of our eyes. What do you recall? He asks, no longer making eye contact with me, but reading words I have yet to speak on my wrist.
Fire.
There was fire. We were attacked. He reaches toward my chest, unzipping my jacket, slowly revealing the gnarly mutation upon it. Are you sure of that? I swing repugnant across his head, sending him stumbling back a few feet, then attempt to pull away, but his grip on my wrist was mechanically firm and unusually strong. I desperately reach toward his face and grab his oxygen mask and begin prying it from it. I can see the radiation cloud his face and flood his nostrils from his heavy breathing. He was unfazed, however, and certainly not suffocating in the least. It made more sense with how he was able to begin lifting me up by my forearm with inhuman strength. I maneuver myself and mount his bicep with my mutant shark jaws and crush the appendage violently. The flesh punctured and tendons tore like a human arm, yet the reaction I expected didn't follow. Surprisingly enough, his arm dissolves into a glowing cerulean ectoplasm that melts between my teeth. And we lock eyes.
whoever this person was. I was in no position to be tangling with him. I pull away from my maimed attacker and turn tail, barging through the front pub door, exiting toward the small port, only to find my ship being hauled up into a much larger vessel, several times its size, like a tarantula rapturing a hummingbird up into its matrix. Football stadium-sized ship's presence spiked a sudden emotion of childlike inferiority, yet homely nostalgia all in one rattling gasp. Written in an illustrious font plastered across its side reads, "Coach," as it turns and maneuvers around the west end of the space station. Giant, blinding dual spotlights open up over the ship's nose and point both beams on me. Detective Clifford busts through the bar door menacingly, an oxygen mask dangling from his scarf like a useless prop. I suddenly hear a new voice permeate through a veil of white noise and emit from the speakerphone within his mouth, unsynced with the minimal movement of his jaws.
T-142-ANARCHXIIT.
I was trapped and too busy worried about my exit plan to interpret what it was saying to me. I reach into repugnant for a trump card and retrieve a military-grade plasma grenade, but was swiftly constricted by Detective Clifford, who shifts between corporeal and incorporeal until his iron grip solidifies around my forearm, then immediately breaks it backward at a painstaking 80-degree angle. The grenade drops and rolls out of reach. My adrenaline was high, but the pain higher. My one-armed assailant grabs and bashes my head into the floor as ravenous hands of the undead reach from out of a murky portal, dripping in cerulean ectoplasm. The ground begins to peel away from under me, revealing glowing caverns of undead travelers manifesting below. This was the will of the detective. A desperate ghoul reaches from the abyss, grabs and rips my oxygen mask off of my face, just as more astronaut joggers subdue and hold my head back while I gasp for air. I knew I was gonna die, but all I could think about at that very moment was my client's request. Enchanted gems. To my surprise, I wasn't suffocating. My lungs settled. How is this so? The ship's intercom begins bellowing through the detective's head once more, rattling off the same nonsensical string of numbers that meant nothing to me. Or so I thought.
T-142-ANARCHXIIT.
The detective jams his finger between my eyes and massages it, as if soliciting a reaction from my pineal gland. I am soon overcome with the feeling of climbing jubilation, then a rough descent into no feeling at all, and everything goes dark. I was being deactivated. Two coach technicians stand over my ice-cold, dormant vessel, sprawled out on a large workstation bench. The lead technician guides the other through the motions. The trainee looked young, confident, and not at all intimidated by the factory of dangling bodies gliding across the room on various beltways, platforms, and in some cases being dumped into holes. Metal rods suddenly jut out from the workbench, impaling my wrists, ankle, and chest, locking me in place, as I am then tilted and dipped head deep into a vat of translucent fluid beside countless other clones like myself. We were tacklers. Living, breathing beings like you, but created to serve purposes. Nothing more, nothing less. "This is him?" the trainee asks. "Yes, this is it." "Is it sleep?" "It's sleep." "How long has it been roaming off the grid?" "About a year." "Seems to have done well for itself off-field." "Yeah, it has. It was salvaged and sabotaged by a technomancer. The mancer was able to tap into its brain nodes, and they had it on an endless loop of scavenger hunts, but
It took care of it.
The senior technician points at a melted component lodged within my exposed brain, resting inside my unfurled skull, primed for configuration. Tacklers were soulless mutants that were entirely configurable for its handler's liking and designed to be able, and able was sure and guaranteed by Coach Corporation. The Expanse's environment was too vile for humans to traverse, ensuring that they are confined to their field ships, resorting to the deployment of mere androids and drones for the collection of resources. It wasn't until Coach Corporation, founded by little green men, some would say, came along with bleeding-edge biotechnology that tiptoed beyond the boundaries of playing God. The creation of life, the inhumane production of living weapons, was a consensus, but became undeniably necessary. Field ships in possession of a tackler were able to survive and prosper. Whether configuring them for security to protect their field, or to harvest and hunt for resources and food, it was the tackler that got it done, with no expense to you and yours. The trainee continues to barrage the senior tech with questions. So what happened to its previous handlers? The senior technician looks around to ensure that they have privacy. It killed them.
What? No.
Did turning it into a killing machine backfire on the handlers or something?
No.
I'm exaggerating. Its owners were relatively tame. Looks to have been assigned to a field of scavengers. The technician's finger slides down the short list of programs taught to me. Small list for such a prestigious weapon. Seems like a case of wasted potential if you ask me. Look, appraisal, mechanics, mixology, dungeon mastering. These were some wild boys. Seemed like a night of role-playing gone wrong maybe, huh? The senior tech pulls a lever, summoning mechanical arms gliding across the ceiling, carrying with it a thin veil that wraps my entire body, sterilizing it, then evaporating shortly after. So fresh and so clean. This tackler actually is an anomaly. An anomaly? What's it do? Turn water into wine and win a natural 20? The senior technician doesn't laugh and turns to the young trainee. Hey, I shouldn't be telling you this, but I figure if we're responsible for its refurbishment, I could be a little transparent. No, this one actually is unstable. Constantly mutating. They said that the Narcissus field ship is obliterated by radiation potent enough to melt a sun. And it was all traced back to this guy. The bench is spun clockwise, placing my exposed brain in front of my handlers at eye level. Both technicians stare into the brain, the surfaces of their goggles flickering from the interfaces. That's dangerous, the trainee murmurs. Indeed. Which is why this tackler is kept incognito. The senior technician queues up a factory reset of my entire program library. I'll lose my job if someone gets control of him again. Gotta make sure I do it right this time. The senior tech cracks his knuckles and begins to operate on the memory module previously sabotaged by the technomancer. Once his work is undone, he is then abruptly halted by his trainee, who we see now holding a pistol to his temple, and sends a bullet through him execution style. Trainee, or the corporate assassin, swiftly reinstalls and repairs my brain, then has me stored away soon to be placed back on the black market. May my existence be not a curse, but a blessing to the souls who would acquire me. I apologize ahead of time.